the chaining process where certain things have to happen in a certain order account for a lot of behaviors going off track. The classic one would be you're greeting the dog, it jumps up, you say sit, the dog sits, the dog gets reinforced for sitting. But the dog doesn't do the sit without the jump up.
This is Learning About Dogs, a podcast for people who love learning about teaching dogs. I'm Sue McGuire, a manager of a canine behavior program at an animal shelter near San Francisco. At the recent conference of the Art and Science of Animal Training in Texas this year, there was a deep academic dive into sequences and chains. Some are not always chains, some are. But for practitioners, does it really matter? And that, of course, caused Kane Lawrence and myself to do a deep dive and say, be aware, you're surrounded by chains. Time to talk to you in your afternoon, and I'm at 0:30 in my morning. And it's just lovely. The birds are out.
My binoculars are out because I always like to go and see which birds are making that noise. Because even if you listen to it on a download, it doesn't sound quite the same because obviously they have regional accents. And then you hear some, you know, by September time, you'll hear a young male blackbird practicing his songs. And you're going, no, you haven't got that right yet. Try it again. And off he goes again. And yeah, it's like exactly what we're talking about. It's like you have to recite a poem and you get near the end and you got one note wrong. Oh, I've got to start all over again.
And the girls are not impressed.
Oh, God, those boys again.
Well, speaking of chains and sequences of songs, is that a bad segue? But you wanted to talk about
it. Does really, yeah. So this gets beyond complicated the minute you start to do research on it or find out, because depending on what field you're looking at, they are not the same thing at all. Yes, and a chain and a sequence is the same thing to some people, and it's different things to other people. So stripping it right down to its bare underwear, the few things that I came out with at the end of spending an entire weekend listening to the discussions on this, for practical purposes, we would talk about component behaviors, which we would teach, and both chains and sequences contain component behaviors. This is the broken down part of the behavior that you actually teach. A chain, any of these things can be put together in a minimum of two behaviors, so either a chain or a sequence. As soon as two behaviors are linked, it's a chain or a sequence. And the other thing they've got in common is only one behavior is contiguous to the reinforcer. So it only looks like one behavior gets reinforced or is slapped back up against the reinforcer. So what's the difference between a chain and a sequence? The only benefit I could see to calling them different things is under certain conditions, you will get reinforced if A is followed by B. No, let's not use A and B. We're going to get stuck with the ABC cycle. If Y follows X. Yes, yeah, so X happens. That's okay. Followed by Y, and you'll get your reinforcer. The other way is as long as you do both X and Y, you'll get your reinforcer at some time. So from a dog point of view, an agility course would be a sequence because you can do them in any order, with the exception of the dog walk, which has to happen in a specific order. So a sequence can contain a chain. Clear as mud, yeah?
Okay.
But that's the only thing we need to worry about is, is there a specific order in which they have to be completed for you to be able to get the reinforcer, or can they be completed in any order, provided they are all completed? So if I was training the dog to put the toys in a box, does it matter which order they go in? No, as long as the dog picks up all those toys and puts them in the box, that would be a sequence. But if it was putting rings on a pole, those would have to go in a certain order. That would be a chain. So they'd have to start with the largest ring first. Yep. Or if they were doing those cups that go inside each other, you know, the stacking cups,
yes,
they would have to go in a specific order. So the question is not whether which is a chain, which is a sequence, which part of it has the dog got to remember the order in which they happen, as opposed to having done everything. A retrieve is a chain. So in other words, it has to happen in a specific order. Then the other element that we add on to this, I would put a compound on here as well, where behaviors are occurring simultaneously. So the components could happen at the same time, something like retrieve over jump. Yep. So the dog is actually carrying something whilst they do another behavior. So there's two components occurring. They're merged together or they're occurring simultaneously. And then you could also have a, now this wouldn't matter if it's a chain or a sequence, but the same component occurs again and again and again, and that would be duration.
Okay. That's interesting concept to look at, that duration would be considered.
Well,
that,
yeah, because we teach, we really teach components. So if I want something to happen longer, I just ask the same component to happen three times and then drop the cues.
Why is understanding, is it important to understand the difference between sequence and changes, and or is it not?
Well, how would it affect how you teach it? So if it affects how you, if the understanding is critical as to how you would then teach it to the dog, then yes, it does matter. If it doesn't make any difference to how you practically apply it, I would suggest it doesn't matter. So that was probably the conclusion we came to after 3 days of it at a conference. You could see the practitioners sort of getting a bit restless in the chair going, yeah, but this is not going to affect how I do it. No, that's not going to affect how I do it either. Did he do this first or that first? And is it harder to do this first and that first? Or do you have to, you know, and it's like, it's not going to make any difference to me because I'm a practitioner. So would it make a difference to the order in which a dog learns things? So say we looked at retrieve, you know, would you separate all those components? Would you teach those components in any specific order? Could that affect how the dog remembers the order of doing things? So say you were doing something like the cup stacking, you know, where there's things have to go in a specific order. Mm-hmm. One of the components is pick up and place something in a certain place. But then the separate thing to make that chain run as a chain is the dog's got to recognize the order in which they happen, which is a completely different concept to just putting the components together. So the cues for a chain come from within the chain. So the behavior happens, and then that leads you on to the next behavior, and then you get the reinforcer. Whereas in a sequence, the components may be external. In fact, one of the examples that was given at the weekend, if you're sweeping the floor, it wouldn't matter what order you do it in as long as the floor ends up being swept. Yeah, you just sweep the floor. That's duration. Yeah. But if you're painting the floor, would it matter how you start and where you finish?
Well, you found that out when you were doing your steps a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly. So if you start in the wrong corner, you, oh dear, now you can't walk out of the room. So that would matter in which order you do it. That would be a chain.
You know, you were talking about the example of the retrieve and whether you would teach that in a specific order. It's interesting how some of those, that one, the learner certainly shows you the order, right?
No, what do you mean?
Well, let's say that, you know, the dog has a natural retrieve, a natural carrier, if you will. Then I wouldn't interrupt that. I mean, I think sometimes I think we dive too deep. Is he doing it in the right order? Have I cued that? What cued that? And sometimes I think you just need to let things flow a little bit and observe it. But
yeah, it depends. If you've got a dog that's not a natural retriever.
Right. Then you would need to break it down for sure.
Yeah. But would it matter which order you teach it in?
Oh, I think so. Don't you? Yeah.
So, well,
if it's a retrieve.
Well, think about it. Do they need to learn to be able to hold and present before they learn the pickup?
Yes, I think.
No, they don't. Well, no.
No, you don't.
No. Because they can pick up and deliver it to hand without any sit and present, can't they?
Oh, yes, they can.
Or,
do
you need to teach? You know, so this is, you then start to have to think, what do I want the dog to remember? So when the dog picks up, what should they be thinking when they pick up? Oh, whoopee, I'm going to launch myself around the field with this. Or should they be thinking, where is she? Where's mum? Where have I got to go with this now? Oh, what have I got to do next? You know, so often the way you teach something, if you've maybe taught it out of the back chaining, where the focal point is for the dog is the point at which they get the reinforcement. Then when they pick up, they're thinking about that food's back there. So that shapes the turn on pickup because the reinforcement for them is coming back to you for a piece of food, if that's the case. But if it's a retrieving breed that loves to carry, once they've collected it, coming back to you actually might not be reinforcing because you take the damn thing off them.
Exactly.
And they don't like giving it up. Yep. So depending on what is the reinforcer, we try and load the chain to naturally run, if you like, downhill to the reinforcer. You know, so it shouldn't be coming away from something they enjoy doing. They should be coming towards something they enjoy doing. And that would, to me, have a major influence on how you actually teach the chain.
Okay, so let's talk about the retrieve again, because I do think that okay, so let's say you do have a dog who does have a natural carry, who does love the parading, who does all that. So where would you start with an animal, with a learner like that? Because the carry is the reinforcement, I would assume.
Yeah, but then the parading is the reinforcer. So if yes. they're actually pick something up and you're cheering them as they pick it up, why would they come anywhere near you if you're going to take it off them? So to me, as you ask them to go out, you say nothing. When they pick it up, you say nothing. But when they make eye contact with you, you start to party and they get attracted to coming near you. But then if their eye contact suddenly goes beyond you, so you see the dog returning towards you, and instead of looking at you directly, they start to look past you, they're going to do a fly pass. I guarantee you they're going to go flying past you. They're not going to stop.
Oh yeah.
But at which point people just go, oh yeah, come. So they end up reinforcing the going away, not the coming towards. So it's very easy to shape a dog that's a natural carrier, because they feel the vacuum of your silence. You know, as they're parading around, any outgoing, outward bound parading, nobody says anything. Any lateral parading, nobody says anything. And until the dog turns towards you, you're standing there absolutely silent. They turn towards you and you suddenly change your behavior and think that they look the best thing on earth. And this is just so attractive. It becomes sticky. Yeah, so they've got to come near you so you can swan all over them and flatter them at how good they are at doing this. That then becomes the target of them picking up an item. You know, they want all this flattery, so they're naturally attracted to come towards you. Mm-hmm. But those dogs, you do not take that off them and just chuck it again. You know, that cartoon where you see the dog sitting there thinking, he must like to throw things, which is why I have to go and fetch it. Yeah. You know, and the guy's thinking, he must love to retrieve, which is why I have to throw things. Complete misunderstanding of what it's about. Dogs don't like to fetch.
They like to carry and parade.
Yeah, or if it's a border collie, they're going to want to stand on and stop it escaping. Totally different thing altogether. And what does that person do? Pick it up and chuck it. Ah, yeah, I've got to go fetch it again, put it down there, and watch it. You know, and all they want to do is watch it. They don't want to go chasing after things. Yeah. Stand and watch it.
They just want to see where it's going to go so they can trap it or start getting ahead
so
of it.
So there's the whole sort of, again, you know, this retrieve is that bit of a sort of traditional me master, you dog, fetch. You know, and the whole early day assessment of which is going to be a puppy that wants to please you is the one that wants to bring you the toy to please you and all this sort of stuff. So retrieve has tended to carry forward a historic, that's the whole point of having dogs, so you don't have to get your feet wet and get the ducks out the water. The dog will do it for you. So, you know, as an exercise, yeah, I think we can do better now. Certainly doing playing games like doing cup stacking. Great fun, or the rings on a post or toys in a box, but that's not much to retrieve as a taught behavior where the dog learns the different skills to pick up different types of objects. They look at an object, work out how to pick it up. So if they're doing cup stacking with the opening upwards, as if a drinking cup, they have to learn how to take the rim on the near side so they can pick it up and put it in and something else. If they take it on the near side, they'll probably cover their face with it.
Yes.
And then they have no idea where to put the cup to. So we played around this with the IKEA plastic picnic sets. And one of the dogs was a golden retriever, and his pick up and place was the bowls. Yes, they're about 4 inches diameter, inch and a half deep. He'd constantly pick one up where he couldn't see where he was going. So he would end up having no idea where to place it for the next one. So we had to teach him how to pick up on the far rim, so he could actually have it dangling down over his lower jaw, and then he could see where he actually had to place it. So that was the challenge on that component of that behavior, because that component had to be taught a certain way for the chain to be able to be successful. And then we loaded the reinforcer to having placed it, not on picking up, because it's a golden retriever. He would go around the room 20 times, so just on pickup. So the pickup was an inch, 2 inches, drop it in, yeah, treats, you know. So he was always then focused on pickup where am I placing it? Because as soon as I place it, I get my reinforcer. Mm-hmm. So yes, that was taught in that order.
Yes.
Good fun.
So, yeah.
It does worry me though when I look at agility where people are working on the down contact point in isolation from the rest of the equipment, I think that is maybe something that needs thinking. With me, it's you're taking it out of a chain, but it's a false connection to the preceding behaviors.
If you were to do that correctly, then you would do it not necessarily at full speed, but you'd certainly add the movement prior to the stop.
Absolutely.
In order to,
in a straight line to that component. I don't like to see them hop on from the side or whatever they call it. You know, they're coming around in a curve. I think the dynamics are quite different. The momentum's different, and they're learning a different type of component. But, you know, I'm not an agility specialist.
Well, you know, speaking of a very novice agility, I guess what I use cup on a stick for.
Oh, well, the forward. Going forward.
Yes. And then I'm looking for a specific when you stop. I would like most of your weight to be on your hind end and your head forward. And I use cup on a stick for that. And it was beautiful.
Back in the olden days, we used to take a hula hoop apart and plug that into the grass about 1 or 2 feet beyond the end of the contact point. And that hula hoop was of such a height that the dog anticipated going under it.
Yes.
So it had like, you know, the foam that goes around pipes in the winter, insulating foam. So the dog could see it, but it didn't look like a jump. It was definitely a hoop. And they learned to run under it. So to me, it was purely conditioned. If you're doing this, anticipate that freaking hoop's going to be there and you're going to have to go underneath it. And then we'd take the piping off. And then we'd have a hoop that was green coloured, you know, but the dogs always just became physically conditioned that this is how you run down planks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or was that just too simple? I don't know.
Well, let's put it this way. People overthink agility. I know we're shocked that I said that.
Yeah, because, you know, it's 0.04 of a second is the difference between winning and not winning. But sometimes they're overthinking the things they think they can control that are actually not the priority.
Yeah.
We were talking to somebody I knew when we did obedience back in the 70s, you know, how far we've come from then. Well, sure, we don't do, you know, the horrendous punish everything you don't like until you're left with what you want philosophy. But nowadays I see people unable to praise a dog, i.e. they're unable to actually reinforce a dog unless they've got treats or toys. Cannot reinforce a dog just by affection or, you know, arousing the dog or anything else. Unable to actually handle a dog. Somebody wanted to teach the dog to lift up their front leg as if it was limping. Yeah, not with the foot way out, but just off the ground. And I said, So let's just do it with just asking the dog to transfer the weight onto the other front leg. How do I do that? Well, just touch the dog here. That was completely alien behavior. You know, to be able to do the balancing on three legs, which would have been, you know, or to be able to just put the dog into a sit by hand without being coercive, just to be able to just gently suggest from where your hands are that the dog move a certain way or resist a certain way, you know, those sort of things, all pretty much all gone. Because, you know, the training schools today are marker-based, reinforcement-based, or they're simply not training. Is training becoming the, you know, the poorer cousin to behavioural work? And we don't have to train this. We just have to change the emotional context and the behaviour will miraculously sort itself out.
Oh, yes. I saw funny about that the other day. About he will just magically do it because he'll read my magical aura. And intuit. But no.
Yes, you know, each to their own.
Yeah.
Like the lady that asked me, I have to admit, this is a bit Californian, and it was in California, whether the clicker would interfere with the crystal resonance between her crystal and the dog's crystal.
Yes, it does.
I don't know. I don't know. Each to their own. It's a wild world out there.
No, what you should have said was yes. Just yes.
Well, probably yes. Does it interfere with you being able to connect to your dog? Quite possibly. Are you with me? Yeah, quite possibly. Because I've clicked and fed it. I don't need to actually put anything of myself into this process. I don't need to smile. I don't need to touch their face, you know, and appreciating what they've actually done. I don't even need to look at them because I'm delivering the reinforcer. Okay, so those things are certain things have fallen by the wayside in the name of modern training, which I think is a bit of a shame.
It is.
But, you know.
I have to admit that I actually, in preparing for this, I did read through all of Katie Bartlett's notes on ASAP. Oh my God.
Yeah, okay. I think they just like to make it more complicated because they can. Same as you said about agility, you know, if you want to, wow, complicated must mean better.
I thought I was sitting, is there going to be a test on this? The difference between tandem chains and unless I had two sheep going into a pen at the same time, I don't think it would matter.
Yeah. But when we heard then the different branches of academics discussing it, I mean, we could have left the room and they would never even notice. It's an academic discussion area and there are interesting things that come out of it that we know. So something, in actual fact, the chaining process where certain things have to happen in a certain order account for a lot of behaviors going off track. The classic one would be you're greeting the dog, it jumps up, you say sit, the dog sits, the dog gets reinforced for sitting. But the dog doesn't do the sit without the jump up. You know, that's the classic, well, I keep doing this, and I keep reinforcing the desired behavior, I ignore the unwanted behavior, but because the desired behavior has been linked by the dog to the preceding behavior of jumping up, two things are going to happen. One, the dog believes that I have to jump up for the sit to get noticed, which probably is their experience, because the first time they sat without jumping up, nobody bothered notice. And then the second superstition is this is the dog believes that those two things are locked together. They don't ever realize that the sit could occur without the jump up first because it's never been reinforced. So it's not a matter of how many times you train this before it happens. If that dog makes a connection that you have to do that first for that to happen, then that dog's made that connection. And think of all the superstitious things that people do. You know, we try and train people, even when they're driving a car, to look in the mirror and check before they signal. Do they hail? They signal as they look in the mirror. So those sort of behaviors that start to end up merging together, again, which happens in dog training, where we start the chain that we had started to run blurs together. So it's the dynamics of where the reinforcers are in the chains that start to become the interest to us. So something like, so say your dog's just about to have a roll in some fox poo, heads down the rabbit hole, and you call them. They then come and get reinforced. Now, if they were slow at getting their head out the rabbit hole, but they did a smashing run across the field and you gave them treats, what chain have we just reinforced? Not just the running together, you've connected those two behaviors together in that chain. Yeah, and this is often more of a, you're so damn relieved they've come to you, even if they walked, you'd give them a treat when they got there. So it's the locking together of behaviors that we don't want or happen in a fashion that we're not satisfied with that gets us into most trouble. And this is where the chains and chain behaviors start to become really, really important for us to understand what's happening.
So, I think that the challenge is a lot of people, you know, for lack of a better term, don't know how to break that chain.
Yeah. So
how do they break that chain?
Okay. So you've got to pretty much look at each individual one. If I've called Tinky Tonks out the field and she's going, yeah, in a minute, whatever. Yeah. And then she starts to run towards me. By that time, I will be somewhere else. I will be somewhere else. So the second behavior running towards me is like, oh, I'm not trying to punish it, but I cannot stand and afford to spectate that and say, yeah, but you run towards me, but I'm not going to feed you. I don't like this. You know, I'm not going to do anything. I don't want to be reinforcing or punishing. You're running towards me. So I'm just not available. I will have found something else to be busy doing. Yes, even if it's picking the bark off a tree, you hear me, I'll have gone and done something else. Because the availability of reinforcer was only if she responded straight away. So I'm not going to stand there and be doing nothing. We used to have a dog that was, he was secondhand, there's no two ways about it, and he carried quite a lot of secondhand baggage. He would stress quite quickly if he found that the girl that was training her expected too much. So because we all trained off lead in the barn, I think they were doing some shaping on cup stacking or something like that, and he just went for his run around the barn. And everybody else has got pots of food, and they've got toys all over the floor that they're trying to get the dogs to pick up and do the rest of it. And he would go for his runny run around the barn, being a pain in the butt. She called him back. He came, got a click and a treat. Okay, that's happened once, but that happened every week. Yes, every time we did this exercise, at a certain point, he would take off and run around and be a nuisance. But every time he came back, he got a click and a treat. That dog had linked those two things together, undoubtedly. So what could she do? He goes for a run off around the barn. By the time, A, the calling, i.e. the cue for the, you need to stop that behavior and come and do this, that is something that needs to be looked at, but that's a separate issue. But if you called him and he didn't respond, at that moment you have to go and be busy doing something else. So I would get her to start putting her toys away, literally, or putting a coat on or moving furniture. So by the time he self-ended the running around the barn, she could respond at that moment, not when she cued it. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah. So for instance, say the dog's barking at something happening in a neighbor's garden. At some point, you've got two choices. You could say, stop doing that now, come into the house. Yeah, but I just got to have three more barks first. Just three more, and then I'll come. Come. Okay, they come into the house, you're so good. You've just paid them for not coming, i.e. you gave them the cue, they didn't respond, and they'll get the food anyway. The same as dinner's on the table. Whenever you bloody turn up, you know, it'll be there. Well, no, it won't. It's in the dog. You're too late. So you leave the dog barking. If it's not a life-threatening situation, it's not like to get the dog harmed in any other way. At some point, that dog will self-cease the barking and you reinforce. Yes, when the cue to stop barking is like, oh, I'm fed up with this, or nothing seems to be happening, or I just can't be bothered anymore. Oh, gosh, she gives me food when I do that. So the actual cue to stop it came from within the dog. It was prompted by themselves. So now they alert that something weird's going on in the next door. And as they're doing this, they'll start to think, if I stop myself doing this, she's going to pay up. Well, yes, she pays up. There we go. So it's about us being alert to what is cueing the behavior that gets reinforced, not the fact that the barking stops. That makes sense? Because you want the first barking to happen. I don't mind about that, but I want the dog to learn one or two woofs is fine. Then you self-stop. I'm going to give you treats. Where am I? In the kitchen. So the dog's now got to travel to the kitchen to get treats.
So going back a little bit, what is cueing the behavior that gets reinforced? And this is the this is the dog's thought bubble.
Well, either they're getting tired. I mean, there are dogs that will never stop barking. I live not far from one. If the thing that starts the barking is a continuous event and the dog cannot resolve it, something's got to interrupt it. And that I would just sprinkle food, shower it around the dog until they go, well, that's a better option than standing here barking. Because they're barking because at that point in time, there's obviously a function to the barking that they think is going to resolve itself. Mm-hmm. But normally the barking is like, if you look at it on a graph, it's at its peak when it first starts, and then it starts to wane down. You know, they go, whoa, 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 whoa. And you'll see some little peaks and troughs in the intensity of the bark, but it starts to fade down as they've done what they alerted to. It might be just checking out a scent or a noise, but you know, if the children are continually playing up and down the garden, the dog can't stop barking, that's management. You need to go out and fetch the dog. So if a dog alerts at something, it goes away or it's not resolved, that dog will stop barking by itself. Yep. So yes. What's the cue that stops it barking by itself?
Nothing to bark at. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. Or they're getting tired. Or the purpose of the barking's gone, or it's been resolved. There's a whole range of things. I don't know why they stop barking, but they come to a stop. Mm-hmm. They might still be alert and go off again if something's there, but we want that stop, which comes from the dog, to get reinforcement from us. You stop barking. So instead of having a collar that stops the dog from barking, have a collar that dumps food when the dog stops barking.
Yes.
that would be a bit, you know, or a collar it gives off a scent when they stop making a noise. Ooh, that's nice. I don't know. Okay. So you heard it here first. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to market that right now.
Okay. So if Madam's got her head down a rabbit hole and I'm carrying on walking around the, you know, the fields, at some point her head's going to come out the rabbit hole and start looking for me. Yay! Well, come now. And I'll give her food for that. But her behavior was the cue to move onto the chain from head in rabbit hole to run towards me, not me cueing her to do the behavior. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's the dynamic of when the cue, whether the cue comes from something the dog's doing or whether it's an external interrupter to the behavior you don't like. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we get these two stuck together. Now, if I'm at the other end of this scale, if I want to train a chain of behaviors and they're going to happen in a certain order, as we put them together in that order, it's inevitable that the dog will start to slide the behaviors together because the reinforcer at the end is pulling the behaviors together. So if I want to teach the dog to walk backwards and it's got to go back 10 foot, spin, and then lie down. Yes, that might be my freestyle routine. You know what's going to happen is the dog will go back only 8 foot, start to spin, half spin, and lie down to get the reinforcer. Because the reinforcer is all in the lying down, so that's what they're focused on. So instead of waiting for certain elements to complete, the elements sort of tend to merge and overlap one on top of the other.
Yes, I've seen that.
So under those conditions, A, I can do each of those behaviors separately, no problem at all. But when I practice them together in a chain, they start to blur the edges. The behaviors stop becoming clean. Now, when you're looking at this, when you're judging a routine on this, you can see this happening very clearly. And often you can't tell, did the dog spin before it laid out? I can't tell now because it's all a muddy merge of stuff. Or the dog will actually start to walk backwards and start to spin as they're walking backwards and go completely off curve. Or, you know, if you don't do a send out, the dog will go out and start to lie down before it's reached the destination. So under those conditions, we deliberately put in a buffer. And for my buffer, it would be standing still. So it's walk back, stand still. Spin, stand still. Lie down. Yep, and then the lie down gets reinforced. And that buffer of standing still between the components in the chain stop the chain merging into one mess of one thing falling on the other. And almost the same with retrieve. You know, you break the retrieve down. So if you've got a dog that, if you want to practice the elements, I would not practice the whole exercise. I would practice different segments and I'd make sure that certain components are taken out. So I might place the dumbbell, ask the dog to wait 30 foot behind me, walk out, place the dumbbell on the ground in front of me, and just take one step backwards. Now, the dog is learning how to do a fast run out to pick up, but because I'm directly after the turn, not just behind the dumbbell, but the dog has to pick up and turn straight onto me, that affects how they run out. And I can cleanly get the run out turn without running on and doing a great grab and chase out in the wings, because over here that would cost us marks. So you break down the different components, or you'd ask the dog to carry the dumbbell and run towards you and just do that component without the other components starting to have an effect on the behavior. So you'll see the dog often retrieving and then they start mouthing the object as they're coming to present.
Yes.
And this could be the anticipation of the give, or it could be some anxiety about the sit or whatever, but those are indicators that the chain is merging, the chain is slipping into overlaps. So it's not so much which is how to keep them what you want them to be, or how to stop them what you don't want them to be.
Yes, you have to observe them. Yes. I just am going back to how I'm going to title this whole episode, how to get your dog to stop barking by awareness of the chain. Or not stop barking.
No, call it the yo-yos. So the other one that we see a lot is, oh, I'm doing loose lead walking. Yeah, no, your dog's doing a yo-yo. What do you mean? Well, it goes forward to the end of the lead. When it reaches the end of the clip, the walk comes to stop. The dog comes back by your side and you give it a treat. What did you talk to the dog?
Yeah.
Well, I've only ever treated it for walking by my side. Mm-hmm. Yes, but number one, walking at your side has never been offered. That's the odd thing about this chain. If it's X followed by Y, and Y is getting reinforced. You'll probably never find Y happens unless X happens first. So the dog jumps up to get the sit reinforced. The dog goes forward to the end of the lead so that you can stop it and it can come back and get reinforced in the heel position. So dog going forward to the end of the lead, yes, nothing happens. The walk stops. Damn, says the dog, the walk stops. Now, why is she stopped? We need to do the same as why would the dog stop barking? Why would the dog self-initiate coming back to your side? Yep. And within, you know, the yo-yo is the classic, I'm reinforcing what I want and ignoring what I don't like, but I'm not letting the dog pull. Oh, you know. So you what you think is happening is not what is happening. It's become a chain where the dog has learnt the two behaviours have to happen in a specific order, one after the other.
Yes. See that?
Oops. All the time.
So it's the chain is the yo-yo. Yo one happens to happen before yo two gets reinforced.
So, yeah. So I think maybe the bigger title of this episode might be Chains Surround Us. Just have to be.
Yes, you cannot ignore them.
Yeah.
So a chain or a sequence is a minimum of two behaviors. People tend to think of it as one thing after another, after another, after another. No, it's not. It's a minimum of two behaviors. And the yo-yo walking is the classic one. So if the dog is starting to... So we reinforce the dog for staying connected. Yes, that's our criteria. Nothing to do with the lead, but the dog is walking along and they're, you feel they're connected. If they're connected and you start to slow down to stop, the dog will slow down. If you start to slow down to stop and the dog just carries on at their own speed, you are not connected. At which point you have to stop because you've lost connection, not because the dog's got to the end of the lead. So the loss of connection comes before the dog's reached the end of the lead. So if you think about it, it's three events happening. You're walking along together. The first part of the chain is the dog loses connection. So it's not aware of where you are, which is the whole point of walking together. And because they're not aware of where you are, they've ended up walking ahead of you. Now, long before they've reached the end of the lead and started pulling, the disconnection has already happened. And that's the point at which the walk has got to stop. So the disconnection is the behavior that causes the walk to stop, not the pulling.
And for those of you out there who think that this only can happen with owned dogs with learned history, we do connected walking at the shelter with unowned dogs. And we, within 4 or 5 minutes, the dogs are walking in connection because it's a natural behavior to
It's naturally reinforcing.
Yes.
It's naturally reinforcing. As soon as you say, if you stay connected to me, you'll feel good about this. Oh, that's nice. Cool. Great. Because often the person loses the connection.
Well, the person,
why the dog's disconnected.
The person loses connection and the person is confused because they think it's about having to control this dog.
Yeah.
And once you change the mindset, then you start getting a little bit different.
You know, we had the, in fact, it was, I think it was another weekend following on, we had a, you know, a dog that had been pulling for 8 months. It was only a young 14-month-old dog. And she was doing exactly the yo-yo. The dog goes forward, she stops, she calls him back, cued again, to the right position. Good boy, praise, play, yeah. And this dog had no idea what she was trying to ask him to do. Yes, but all he had learnt was go forward, come back, get some play. Go forward, come back, get some play. And you could see that being a desirable chain in other conditions. Are you with me? It was almost like, go search. Good boy. Come back. Tell me what you've done. It was, you know, it's like a pattern. And just walking from one side of the room to the other, she must have done the yo-yo 5 times. You go up, you come back. You go up, you come back. And the minute she took a step forward, he went forward to the end of the lead. Bang. Back again. And we sorted this in 5 minutes, as you said. And it didn't take any treats. Where do I click? You don't.
Click.
You know, certainly with your secondhand dogs, you may need to use a clicker and food to emphasize the connection. But she had good connection with the dog. But this was just a chain of behaviors that had just got misunderstood what a chain was. And he'd been labeled as a dog with poor impulse control.
Oh, don't use that word in our presence.
Should we spit together? Got poor impulse control. Don't tell me. I know where that came from.
Oh, don't get me started. I think this is such an important episode. So now the task for listeners is to observe their life and see where two behaviors are happening
yeah,
continually,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
next to each other, and see if you can pull that
apart.
Well,
yeah, yeah. One is contingent on the other happening. Yes. Then you've got a chain.
Then you've got a chain.
And it's not about whether you intended to chain them or not. If the dog has made the connection, the dog has made the connection.
Okay. And we're not even going to talk about my previous dog, Vespa, my JRT, going out and barking and then waiting for me to squeak the toy to come in because I created the chain and going outside.
Well, I know what she wants me to do. If I run outside and just bark at the air, she'll get the squeaky toy out. Oh, cool.
I think it's very important for us to air our dirty laundry at times. Yes. Just keeping it real.
Yes. I've known dogs that have gone to the window bark because a certain television program started. Yes, because it's an important one. No, no, she can't bark now. Get some treats. Stop her barking. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, but, you know, people have these superstitious patterns in themselves, you know? Supermarkets are studying these chain behaviors all the time. Yes, how can we get them to do that so that that happens? So I do this supermarket thing where you scan your own shopping as you're going around.
Yes.
Yeah, and I've done that for probably a year or two now. So I go to a supermarket that doesn't have it, and I put the stuff in my basket without scanning, and I'm feeling uncomfortable. It felt like I was shoplifting. Because normally you pick up, do your beep, beep, yep, in the basket, in your own bag. Beep, beep, in your own bag. So heaven help me if I ever went to this store where your phone knows what you're picking up and adds it to your bill. You know, the Amazon thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to feel so uncomfortable because I won't have completed the chain.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, I had a hard enough time with self-checkout. So, yeah, don't get me started on.
Yeah. And all the naughty things people do, they buy bags of carrots that are heavy or say they've got a bag of carrots, but they haven't. So they I don't know. And the whole thing about people, never mind, this is going off track altogether.
Which we do love.
Yes, yes.
All right. You have any courses coming up on chaining and sequences or anything like that?
Later in the year, yes, I'm sure we do have. Do I have a course on that? I will do.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't remember offhand. Certainly, I have another workshop on it. So it's an important one. You know, most people don't realize that they're around you and they're happening and the dynamics of the reinforcement of that combined occurrences of behaviors is so strong. That, you know, it writes up most of our superstitious behaviors. When you leave the house, what's your chain? Yes. Do you close all your windows, check the gas is off, check the heating's off, pick up this, pick up that, do this, do that. You have a chain that happens in a certain order and you do that order to build a good habit. You try and go out of order and see what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you end up, you turn the car around and drive back home to make sure you turned off the gas. That's what you do. From blackbird mating calls to checking stuff out at the supermarket, chains, they're around us. Hey, thanks for listening. One of the best ways to help support this podcast, Learning About Dogs, is to rate and review us on iTunes. And be sure to tell your friends. Thanks for listening.